You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, everybody. It is 10:38 on the East Coast, and a UFC event is over. This is wonderful stuff, and it ended with a damn good performance, probably the very best, start to finish, from the founding member of the New England Cartel. Rob Font dominates Cody Garbrandt, sweeps the scorecards on two of the judges' scorecards. Derek clearly was watching a different fight, scored at 48-47, but it is what it is. The right fighter won, and that's all that matters. As we welcome you to the UFC Vegas 27 post-fight show, live on the MMA Fighting YouTube page, Twitter, and Facebook. I am Mike Heck. Got the whole crew with me once again. We got Jose Youngs. We got the Prince of Positivity. We got E. Casey Lydon on the ones and twos.
Hey, hey. That's my new thing. Okay. Hey. Like
an 80s DJ.
Hey. How's it doing?
Hey.
Hey.
Trying to hit that post. All right. So, interesting event. We saw a little bit of everything on this night, but in the end, main event was pretty fun. Rob Font turned it on as the fight progressed, and he looked pretty damn good tonight. He established himself as clearly one of the best 135 pounders in the world, defeats Cody Garbrandt via unanimous decision. Jose, your thoughts on how this main event played out?
I'm Jose. My mic doesn't work.
Mike always muted. Am I back now? Yeah, I always see levels, and then
you have to hit it. Yeah, just hit it.
I guess I have to punch it anyway. I picked Cody Garbrandt to win, but I'm not calling it a 50-50 fight because I obviously picked Cody Garbrandt to win. I actually favored him, but it was a slight favorite. I did not expect Rob Font to just piece him up with boxing. I thought Cody Garbrandt's head movement has been pretty good as of late. Obviously, in the Asunsa fight, that's kind of what he showcased. And he's always been known as one of these, as Michael Bisping said it 1,000 times on the broadcast, because I actually watched the broadcast. I watched it with the broadcast on this time. He just kept talking about, oh, one punch knockout power. Cody Garbrandt obviously has some of the best hands at 135 pounds, if not all of the UFC. So I did not expect Rob Font to just piece him up for 25 minutes. I think I had it 4-1 Rob Font with that first round, giving it to Cody Garbrandt. But I know a lot of people are complaining about the scorecards. Don't really care. The right person won, regardless of the scorecards. At least all three judges had the right man winning. So if you take away the weird rounds, that's pretty much the only thing you complain about. But yeah, Rob Font looked fantastic. I'm not going to call him the best bantamweight in the world like some people are on Twitter. I think someone, was it Michael Bisping or Paul Felder, said that Rob Font might have the best jab in all of MMA. I don't agree with that, but I think Rob Font is fantastic, and it clearly shows that down at the New England Cartel, him training with Calvin Kattar for so long, his boxing is clearly on point. So Rob Font made me put my foot in my mouth when I picked Cody Garbrandt, and he is fantastic, and it opens up an entire new world of possible matchups that I really want to see at 135 pounds.
AK, your thoughts. And we're not, I'm not going to sit out here on my pedestal because I beat you in the picks. It was like the ugliest pick win ever. It was like earning the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference in the NBA with an under 500 record. I mean, that's basically how my picks were. I think I lost like seven fights in a row and then Font finally picked it up for me.
That's all that matters.
Shots fired at the Washington Wizards. Come on now. We got a lot of people in Washington who loves the show. And by the way, technically we tied with the amount of correct picks, but you did win on topology points. I think if we're using the topology point system, you did win, but we actually both came in under 500. We tied at five picks each out of 12.
Wait, I didn't even submit my picks and I probably won. So yeah,
you didn't even submit your picks. And actually, yes. And so Mike and I tied at five, but Mike did win on points. Mike is, and also he won the main event, which we normally use as a tiebreaker. So either way, Mike won, but yeah, five correct picks each.
All right. Well, what did you think of the main event?
What did I think of the main event? I'm okay. No, well, let me first. Are we still technically after dark? I know we're on early in the evening. Can I ask a little?
On the East Coast, we're after dark.
Are you going to curse?
Oh, hold on. Sorry. Can I curse a little? Sorry. I my audio went up there for a second. Can I curse a little bit? I know we're not, even though we're not after dark. I think most people know this, but I think it's important for me to say it. I don't know shit about picking fights. All right. I might not know shit about MMA. I think, again, people have said this to me. People have tried to tell me how little I know about MMA. I've been defiant. I have been, you know, sometimes I try and take it as constructive criticism, but like, you know, privately I tell myself, no, you're great. You write for MMAfighting.com. You know what you're talking about. I don't know anything. I went 0-6 on the main card, which is the only, which if people go to MMAfighting.com, those are the ones that I actually write out like predictions for. So those are usually the only ones people pay attention to. They don't care about the prelim picks. So anyone who wants to head over there and slander me, by all means, it's fair game. I don't know nothing. And it's not just that I know I'll talk about the rest of the card later. I'll just say right now, it's not just that I got the picks wrong. I was like so wrong in how the fights would unfold. It's not even just picking the wrong person. It's like, oh, I thought it would go this way. It went completely the other way. I was kind of accurate at the main event. As far as I said, if this stays a straight boxing match, then Font has the advantage. I think we all saw that. It stayed a straight boxing match because of him, because of his takedown defense, because of his ability to control the range. So it wasn't just like Garbrandt, fell into it. It's like, no, you give credit to Font. He made it into a boxing match and that was his biggest strength. And he looks spectacular tonight. So yeah, I don't know about best bantamweight. I don't know about best jab, but damn, he clearly made, like, you know, top four, top three right now, undisputed.
Casey?
I agree with everything AK said at the beginning about him knowing shit about MMA. So yeah, you're right, AK, you know nothing. So
Thank you.
Main event. I did pick Garbrandt coming to this, but as much as I thought Rob Font's boxing performance was incredible, I did go into this thinking, what Cody Garbrandt are we going to see after this the COVID-19 effects he had on him? And I know Bisping alluded to it during the fight, but man, that I know Cody got hit a lot and everything, but that just didn't. Looks like a different Cody Garbrandt out there. Maybe, but there's a lot of other factors. You know, we kind of went into this thinking, well, if calm Cody's in there, he's going to win. But if you get the rage Cody, he'll get knocked out. But Cody seemed to do better when he was in a little bit of rage mode. And but give Rob incredible amounts of credit for never kind of getting into that. I feel like Cody Garbrandt looked at that replay of him knocking out a Sensei. I was like, oh, I'm gonna try that 50 times. And every time he kind of dipped, like Rob's like, dude, I've seen the highlight. I know it's coming. So outside of that, I mean, just a great performance from Rob Font. And I don't think he gets a title shot from this, unfortunately for him. But he's elite. He's one fight away. And it's a great performance. And what an incredible jab. Jabs win fights.
Yeah, I had a little like inside baseball because I watched Rob Font's final sparring session, and poor Tateki Matsuda, shout out to MMA vet, 25 fights, Cage Titan CES, and a slew of others. Takeki Matsuda got lit up like a Christmas tree by that Rob Font jab for like 20 minutes straight. I felt bad for the kid. He was just getting lit up over and over again. That jab, I mean, I couldn't even blink. I was watching that jab land so much. I was like, man, if this jab starts landing this fight, it's going to be a long night for Cody. And Font just kept landing that jab over and over again. I know he wanted to get Cody frustrated. I think he did a little bit in the fifth round, but Cody, to his credit, stayed composed throughout most of the fight, even when things were getting bad. I know Font stung him. I think it was in round two, maybe round three. It was either the second or third round where Font had him on like wobbly legs for a minute. And they even said on the broadcast, like normally when Cody gets rocked, like that's when the guy comes out who just like loses his mind and loses his composure, but stuck with it, got a takedown, got his wits to him, and just good fight. Rob Font gets it done. Like I kind of stated during the preview show, I don't think this really boosts him up too much in the rankings. I think it's just kind of like defending his spot. But depending on how this all plays out with Dillashaw and Sanhagen, when this title fight will happen, I just don't see it happening in October. I just don't. After the surgery that Sterling had, all of that, it might happen at the end of the year. I wouldn't be shocked to see Font fight the winner of Sanhagen and Dillashaw at this point, just to keep the train moving a little bit, just because we don't know when the title fight's happening. So big win for Font. He moves on to bigger and better things. And there you go. Good on him.
I'd like to point out too, are we going to put the rest that Cody's got no chin? Because good Lord, he got hit in the face a lot. I mean, we know Mr. Font has some power too. So I was just like, weren't we just kind of waiting for Cody just to turn off, and it just kind of never happened? You know, his knees never really buckled hard. It was just, I mean, Cody's, yeah, I mean,
he got hit in the face 145 times in that fight. 176 significant strikes for Rob Font, the most he has ever landed in his career. He outlanded Cody 176-63 in the fight. Best round for Font was round four, outlanded Cody 51-12. And then round five was 45-15.
I know there were no 10-8s, but man, those feel like there could be some. I mean, I know he didn't get dropped, but those are dominant rounds. And I mean, by the criteria of what 10-8s are, I wouldn't have been surprised, but 50-45 is obviously a good score.
What was the significant strike advantage in the last round, Mike?
45-15.
45-15, and Derek Cleary gave him that round.
Yep. Oh, he gave him round four?
No, round five and one and five. One, which I think people seem to agree was close. I didn't. I actually thought one was pretty clearly for Font, but that is the one I saw most people were saying was close, so sure. Round five... the first 30 seconds, 41. Mm-hmm. Then the rest of it wasn't unlike the other rounds. And obviously, and again, the numbers aren't, I always say the numbers, even significant strike stats, which are helpful, are never, don't necessarily tell the whole story. But I thought it was a pretty clear Font round as well, other than the first 30, 40 seconds. So hearing the numbers, that sounds right.
Yeah, for those wondering the numbers in the first round, Font outstruck Garbrandt 21-13. So that was the closest round by far in terms of strike discrepancy. Round two, 27-8. So he almost tripled them up there, doubled them up in the third round, more than tripled them up in round four, actually more than four times him in round four, and then tripled them up in round five. So
that was tough to watch.
What happened in round one where, because I'm kind of losing my memory already, but like Bisping and Felder were talking like it was a given that Garbrandt had won round one. And I was just kind of like, what?
It was a takedown. He had a takedown.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, he had some top control. He didn't do much with them. He didn't do much with them.
I hate how they reinforce that bad scoring. It's like, well,
they're getting better. I'll say,
you got punched in the face off. Bisping's getting a little better. You know, okay. Yeah. At least Bisping got it right. But yeah. I was just kind
of all night, all day. Yeah. Except for the Derek Cleary 44, but Bisping, I thought was pretty good. He at one point he was really going point by point in one of the fights and kind of breaking down their criteria. But you're right, he does get caught up in the moment. Like 1 minute he'll be explaining it properly, and you'll be kind of like, oh yeah, oh it's great, it's turning around, and then like literally the next round it'll be like, ah, there's that takedown that stole the round.
It's around.
Like, no, Bisping, don't say that. You know, and I get it, and again, Bisping I think is really good at his job. And I think it's just, you know, you get caught, you know, you're used to calling things a certain way. It it's with everyone. It's going to take a lot. I'm sure we do it sometimes too. It's going to take a long time for everyone kind of really. I think we had a question on Between the Links earlier this week about like, do we feel like, or on the A side, do we feel like, you know, people are getting more educated about judging and getting a better understanding of why fights are scored the way they are? And I think, yes, I think it is turning in that direction, but we've learned it a one way for so long. I think it'll take a while, but I think it's overall judging is getting better. How it's talked about in the broadcast is getting better. I think fans are getting better about it. So kudos all around, everyone. Good job.
Yeah. I think the one real question I have with the judging is like, what constitutes a 10-8 round and like what constitutes a 10-7 round? Because I understand why people argue the fact that Michael Chandler got a 10-8 round against Charles Oliveira. I did not agree with that. But if you did agree with that, I'm not like against you for it. How do you grade on the same scale a Michael Chandler 10-8 round against Charles Oliveira and compare it to, say, like Glover Teixeira against Anthony Smith, where he just beat the brakes off of him for the entire round, knocked his teeth out, and just beat him up the whole round, and it's the same. You know what I mean? Like, how is Chandler's a 10-8, but Glover's is not a 10-7? Because that was way more dominant than Chandler's round.
Well, we say that all the time for 10-9 rounds. You know, when someone gets one extra jab or one extra, I held you against the fence for 10 more seconds, and that's a 10-9. But then round four of this fight was also a 10-9, and we saw, you know, Garbrandt get outstruck by like 2,000 significant strikes. So, I mean, there's each 10-9s and 10-8s both have incredibly wide margins.
It's just crazy. Like, boxing's just the 10-point must system is just stupid in MMA. It's easy in boxing. Like, yeah. Knockdowns 10-8, two knockdowns is 10-7. Like, we know what's gonna happen. MMA, we just have no idea.
AK, I mean, I know we have other fights to talk about, but isn't there some other scoring system in another sport that's better for this?
Okay, hold on. First of all, I'll say Mike said it, that the correct answer to this question is, how do you differentiate from a 10-8 from a 10-7 MMA? It's like, you shouldn't have to. The boxing scoring system sucks, and it shouldn't be used in MMA. It just doesn't, there's too many ways in which it doesn't fit, and that's why we get such weird controversy sometimes, in addition to other reasons. But and Casey, if you're suggesting we go with the gymnastic scoring system, that would not apply. That would not apply here. That's more for evaluating cars and things like that. But no, that certainly wouldn't work here. Jose, I don't know. Jose, what do you think, man?
I don't really care about scoring as long as they get the right winner. That's like, if you want to argue 5-0 versus 3-2, that's fine. As long as the right winner gets the second half of their paycheck, that is what I'm in favor of. So whatever gets you there. I like Pride, where they just say this guy won, this guy won, this guy won. One championship does the same thing. But I also do, just because from growing up watching westernized sports, I understand people like to score by round. So you can say 3-2 rather than this guy won the whole fight. I understand American audiences probably aren't trained for that. I enjoy how Japanese MMA does that. It's kind of a nice change of pace. So it's like watching two different products. So if it's all the same, regardless, if Japanese MMA, like one championship and Rise and adapts the UFC's model or the American model, or if UFC adapts the Japanese model, I don't want that. I like them both being different because it kind of separates themselves from the rest of the pack. But I am just more in favor of educated judges and at least picking the right winner. If Rob Font is upset about it, I think he's the only one that has the right to be upset about it, but he won. So end of the day, right man won.
Okay, we have our bonuses.
There's a cool graphic going up on MMAfighting.com, so don't ask me. Okay. I already made it.
All right, so AK probably has already seen it. Casey, you guess, since you probably haven't seen him yet. Okay,
fight of the night. Wait, okay, are there performance bonuses, or is there a fight of the night?
There's fight of the night
and two.
Yep. Okay, fight of the night. Ooh. Okay, performance, Carla. Has to be Carla. And
yep.
What? Carla?
Yeah. She's one.
No,
okay. She's one.
Okay, sorry. What? And another one. Oh, wait, I know this one. Bruno Silva.
Correct.
Yeah. And fight of the night. Jared and Justin.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, the rule. Yeah. These are easy ones. The ones that they got it right.
They never get it right. Yep. Congratulations, UFC.
Maybe 50,000. Probably 50,000.
Bruno, 75,000. He had right on a sign and asked for on national streaming television for please give me 75K.
We'll punch men for money.
Oh my goodness.
That was a hell of a knockout. Poor Victor Rodriguez just getting in there and getting a highlight reel two fights in a row.
Poor bloody elbows at Victor Rodriguez, not doing so well in the octagon. Yeah, I can't remember if I messaged you, Mike, or messaged the whole group. I messaged everyone. I said he's had two fights in the UFC so far, two first round knockouts, a total octagon time of 3 minutes and 46 seconds. So might be time for Victor to go back to the regional scene for some more seasoning.
I think you're right.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Let us talk about Carla Esparza, who got herself a bonus tonight. That was some performance. I mean, this fight was not competitive for even a second. Esparza just goes in there and just, as Jed Meshew likes to say on Between the Links, put the wood to Yan Xiaonan. She gets the win, gets her first finish since winning the title against Rose Namajunas, wow, which is crazy to think about, but that was exactly what she needed. And we were wondering how Dana White was going to react to this whole thing. And as expected, Carla Esparza is the Aljamain Sterling of the women's strawweight division. He is not ready to declare Carla Esparza the number one contender. He is torn between doing the fight with Carla or doing the rematch with Zhang Weili. He is, quote unquote, undecided. This is a travesty. Come on.
I went in the Q&A, the preview show, I said, if Carla just destroys Yan, that's the only way she can get a title shot. And she absolutely did everything she needed to do tonight. It was a perfect performance. I don't think she even got touched. Oh, man. They hate Carla. God,
that's so ridiculous.
Because you know what? Carla might beat Rose. I was like, Carla might beat Rose. I don't know. The Carla that showed up tonight, that woman can beat Rose Namajunas in the rematch.
I would agree with you. That was some performance. AK, what did you think?
That's exactly what you want in a number one. Like, I know, again, they didn't hype it up as a number one contenders fight, but a lot of us weren't looking at it that way. And that's exactly what you want. Is our biggest fear. We're all like, oh my gosh, like this is going to end in a draw. It's going to go to a controversial split. You know, kind of an and we're like, okay, it might end in an unsatisfactory way, which would open the door to a Zhang Weili Rose rematch. But we were very clear in stating if one of them blows the doors off the other, how can you not make the number one contender? Both have a story going into it. Both have lengthy win streaks. So this is exactly what they wanted. They have a fighter with a story, someone who already has a win over the current champion, a dominant win over the current champion from many years ago, but a dominant win nevertheless. And she made the other top contender look foolish. So how much more can you want? I understand the appeal of the Zhang rematch, but that can always happen down the road. I don't understand why you would do an immediate rematch of that as opposed to doing this rematch that's been built up over friggin' years between Esparza and Namajunas.
I think Casey kind of has it right. We need Rose Namajunas to come out and be like, Carla, you took everything I work for, MF-er. I want to fight your effing ass. Yeah. Well, let's go.
That's what Carla should have done.
I wonder. She kind of did it, but Carla can't drop a promo. I mean, that's not on her. She's a great fighter. That's not part of the job. But
yeah, don't ask Dana. Don't ask Dana to do it for you. She's not going to do it for you. Right. Don't ask Dana. Ask Rose. Let's go.
She should have just been like, she should have been like if when Paul Felder was like, do you think you deserve the title shot? She's like, that's a dumb question. I am getting the title shot. That's what she should have said.
Like, I am.
She should have Paul shot. Felder. Paul Felder, good thing you retired because that's a dumb question.
Exactly.
Yeah, I see you got CTE, Paul Felder. That's why you asked questions like that.
She should retire from broadcasting, like, too.
She retires him.
That's what she should have done. But it's also weird that Carla and Weili have the same manager. So whichever one's cheaper, I guess.
Who's manager? Who manages?
That would have been so good.
Don't they all have the same manager?
Yeah, all three.
All three.
Because it's the same situation we had before they made the Rose Weili fight.
I don't get it. Yeah, Rose versus Carla 2, championship fight, co-main event or a fight night right before or afterward, Joanna versus Weili rematch. The winner of that faces the winner of that. It's like it's right there. You have a tournament right there.
It's right there.
Put it together. Sign the papers.
And then Dana said they're doing Mackenzie Dern versus Marina Rodriguez sometime this year. We don't know when, but seems to be the direction for those two ladies. So there you go. Now we got the rest of this division kind of like working itself out.
Is the UFC is Dana just deathly scared that Carla Esparza might be the strawweight champ again? I really think that they're just incredibly worried that Carla could be the champ. Carla be the first female to regain the belt. Right?
No.
Carla needs
Rose. Rose did it.
God, you're right.
Carla needs to like turn heel. She needs to like go to the Cheyenne Bays, Macy Barber sort of school and just kind of play that role. Just a little bit.
Because Cheyenne Bays and Macy Barber can't do it well either. They're just kind of awkward about it.
Yeah.
But Macy at least like creates interest and traffic.
Yeah, and at least clicks. But Carla's at least calling out fighters that would be a good fight. Macy's just calling out fighters that will draw eyeballs, which is fine because you're a prize fighter, so get paid. But Carla's like, yo, I want to fight for the give me that belt, Paul Felder. F out of my screen. That's what she should have done.
Yeah. Don't ask Dana. Yeah. So call out a fighter, not call out Dana to make the fight for you. Come on. But other than that,
Paul Felder has the same manager too. So it's hilarious how everyone's just in this scenario are all managed by the same guy.
MMA.
Now I'm just thinking all these horrible things that Carla should have said to Paul Felder. Oh, it would have been so funny.
My name's not Cookie Monster. My name's Paul Felder. Sucks.
Go to Wikipedia, change your nickname.
Carla, shut up, Paul Felder Esparza.
Shut up, Paul Felder.
Dropping it doesn't matter on him. Oh, man. A la The Rock in the 90s. So great win for her. That was some performance. Jared Vandera and Justin Taffa, well-deserved fight of the night. That was a battle.
Congrats to them. I was giving them a lot of guff because I wanted that to be Rothwell Barnett. I still feel like it should have been Rothwell Barnett, by the way. But they did show up. That was a really fun fight. Good for them that they got to be on the ESPN Plus main card as opposed to the ESPN Plus preliminaries. Ooh, big difference.
When Barnett started walking to the octagon, I was like, oh, this is not going to be good. Just because, like, he wasn't himself. He was trying to be like corporate Chris Barnett. I was like, come on, man. Where's the dancing and the craziness? Like, and they even said, they said in the broadcast, like, Chris wants to make sure that he's all business in there. I'm like, that's not who we want to see. We want to see the crazy. We want to see the big boy. That's what we want to see. We want to see that guy.
He threw a spin kick. He threw a spin kick to the body.
He did throw a spin kick. He did throw a spin kick.
But you know what? I guarantee what happens if he went in there and had fun. Then he lost the fight. Then he would get the whole Michelle Pereira type. He's like, you got to take it more serious. Stop flipping around and dancing and fight matter. You know, it's like MMA fans and dude, Bisping's one of the worst ones at this. They hate fun. They just don't like fun. And Barnett fell into that trap of not having fun. You just got to have fun, man.
I'm not telling him to take a 17-minute walk to the octagon. Just, 15. You know, 2-minute walk. Have
like Rafael Alves.
Craziness.
Rafael Alves was dancing and that. I swear, that he took at least like two and a half minutes to come down. And God bless him, you know. God bless him.
God bless him. Absolutely. So great heavyweight fight. That was a good time. Norma Dumont gets a victory via split decision against Felicia Spencer. I will admit, I did not watch past the first round of that fight.
I don't think that was a split decision, but it is what it is. Again, right person won. I think
the right person.
Yeah, good win for her.
That was the fight I came in saying that fight was ridiculous odds. I thought that Felicia Spencer was like the easiest lock of the night. And I thought Felicia Spencer looked horrible, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, like,
remember when AK,
she just kept throwing the same combo over and over and over. And Dumont just would, like, all right, this is for the 1,000th time. I'm just going to avoid this. And then, like, Steve kicked you in the stomach.
Yeah, like, I like Felicia Spencer. I've watched her many of her Invicta fights. I was excited when she came to the UFC, but she hasn't improved at all, and that's kind of a disappointment.
Do you remember Casey and AK? You were there in Edmonton when she did the open workout, and she was like hitting pads with Seth Petruzzelli. I can't remember who I turned to. It might have been Casey or it might have been Oscar. I was like, she's literally just been throwing the same combo for 10 minutes. That was the open workout, and that's pretty much what happened in this fight. Like, she's an awesome person, but yeah, hasn't improved much.
Yeah, just yeah, it's very she's very frustrating to watch. That's all.
I really enjoyed the Ricardo Ramos Bill Algeo fight. That was a lot of fun. Good win for Ricardo. Jack Hermanson, Edmund Shahbazyan. Talk about a tale of two fights. Shahbazyan looked like the best middleweight in the world for the first 5 minutes of that fight, and then Hermanson just got angry and got mad, and the whole fight just changed.
That's where it's just being a veteran makes a big difference.
100%.
Yeah, it's it. Yeah, it's just experience.
And people are saying like, oh, it's scary that it looks like Shahbazyan has like poor cardio at age 23. I bet he doesn't have poor cardio. It's because he has poor grappling. So, I mean, obviously he's wasting a lot more energy on defense than a more experienced, more technical grappler would, right? I'm not a jiu-jitsu expert, but I think this is just common sense that like when you're better at something, you waste less energy doing it. So he's not a great grappler. Hermanson is a very good and aggressive, like he's a bully. Like, I mean, that's a guy he's going to wear down more experienced guys than Shahbazyan. And if you're like Shahbazyan and you really don't know how to get up properly or defend properly, that gas tank on the ground,
Like 2 years ago on our site, someone wrote an article. It might have been our former colleague Sean or Mark. They interviewed Kayla Harrison, and she's like, I can go to do a judo workout for 3 hours and be fine, and then a 30-minute MMA workout, I'm exhausted. So you're 100% on that.
And that comes to what Jose said. It's experience. And Jack Hermanson, win or lose, he's just had much more high level experience. Win and losses, and losses are important too. When Shahbazyan, I don't want to call Jack Manson old, but Shahbazyan doesn't have that old man strength, that old man cardio that you need in this sport, and the durability. Tough fight for Shahbazyan, great fight for Hermanson. Yeah.
Ben Rothwell, the go-go joke.
We're calling you Shahbazyan. I just forgot how young he is. 23.
23.
That's got to be remembered. He's 23 years old. And just to have
to acquire all those MMA skills and still only be 23, man, you have to super slow roll him now. Now, okay, the whole youngest champion ever or whatever that thing. Okay, that's not happening. Now it's just you gotta think the long game. You know, you can't have a guy like Shahbazyan get knocked out in his next fight, and at 24 years old, his professional MMA career is pretty much over. So his next
then
fight,
he's in the Dominic Reyes category where you went lose like three in a row and you're effed. Yeah, I'll tell you what though, I really want to see Jack Hermanson versus Luke Rockhold. If Luke Rockhold comes back.
I love it.
I only say that because Brandon Allen called out Jack Hermanson on Twitter. There's a fun graphic on MMA Fighting's Instagram. he's like, I want to fight Jack Hermanson to show who has the best ground and pound in like the UFC. And Luke Rockhold's like, don't be a fool, kid, or something like that in our comment section. And Brandon Allen's like, you know where I'm at. You can get this. I'm like, honestly, I want to see Jack Hermanson versus Rockhold. Also, Luke Rockhold and Brennan Allen train at Sanford MMA, so I don't know how that would work. Does Rockhold is at Ruka a lot too, right? With Jason Perillo. Well, he splits time.
Yeah, he splits time.
Yeah, he splits time. But regardless of that interaction right there, I don't think Brennan Allen should get Rockhold or Hermanson yet. Hermanson Rockhold sounds fun, especially if Rockhold is saying that everyone's ducking him. And as Hermanson said, the only person ranked above him that's not matched up right now is Robert Whittaker. I don't think that fight's going to happen because Robert Whittaker is going to fight Izzy Vittori, or if Izzy gets the trilogy, whatever. Rockhold Hermanson sounds fun to me. That's like a fun grappler's dream right there.
Yeah.
That's an awesome scrap.
That'd be good for Rockhold too, not to face a really heavy-handed striker. Obviously, Hermanson can knock him out. But, you know, I think this is primarily a grappling heavy fight, and I think that'd be good for both fighters.
I understand that Shahbazyan's on a two-fight skid, but I wouldn't mind seeing Shahbazi versus Luke Rockhold, if we're being honest. Because I think that fight would play out a lot on the feet.
I agree. I would like maybe Edmund versus Heinisch or Jocko, maybe like a little outside the top 15.
Jocko's a good pick.
Those are just fun fights.
Yeah.
Or like, I also don't want to throw him to like line.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
Guys like
Eric Anders would be fun.
Even farther back, I'm talking, if I'm Shahbazyan's, you know, people, you know, we go back of the line. I don't know how the UFC wants to handle that, but like I said,
just give him like Carl Roberson.
Whoever
that's, Carl that's even that, farther back, fine.
Yeah. Whoever
for me, I'm even farther back. I'm kind of with Kate. I think I know where Kate.
You know,
like,
if
they matched him up with like a contender series debut next time, I wouldn't like complain. I wouldn't be like, oh man, that's way too. I'm like, no, let's recalibrate here. Let's recalibrate here and see where. Obviously, I think he's a step above that, but let's, you know, again, we I feel like we've lost track of what range he is in. So again, I'm pulling him way back. But again, I'm also, people know I'm super cautious with matchmaking. I'm like, I want to slow roll pretty much like everybody. So that, you know, keep that in mind. But I'm going way down. And, you know, as everyone knows, Mike, you and I will have a more definitive answer. I don't know if we'll mention Edmund. We usually only pick the winners, but we might throw a note in there for Edmund just so that people know what we're thinking. But yeah, I'm going like outside the top 25 at this point.
Yeah. Ben Rothwell, good submission win, the go-go choke. Court McGee, nice performance against Claudio Silva. Bruno Silva, performance of the night, KO in 1 minute flat. Josh Koulibaly gets his first UFC win. David Dvorak treated Juan Camilo Honderos accordingly. Lived up to the odds.
Oh, yeah.
First round rear naked choke submission, a one-arm rear naked choke. That was pretty nasty. And then Demir Ismagulov with a good win over Rafael Alves. So that was the festivities. What do the peeps have to say?
All right, let's go to the peeps.
Shout outs to Alves for the breakdance fighting. Getting out of one
that was cool
ground situation. That was insane. What the hell was that? That was nuts.
That was amazing. Does Carla get a title shot now? She's won 5 in a row. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to the tough finale. Have Rose versus Carla 2 as the main event. I think Rose is kind of a pay-per-view draw. I wouldn't hate this idea, but I think Rose is, they feel like Rose is.
Rose is like a good to watch Rose fight. It's like a good co-main event fighter. Like if they threw it on the co-main event, they threw on the co-main event of MSG in November, I think that'd be a fun time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rose,
but That should be the fight. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Going back more like how big a fight it could be. Rose versus Carla 2 should be, with the rivalry and how awesome female strawweights are, it should be a main event on pay-per-view. But unfortunately, the UFC just hasn't promoted Carla really over the years since she's lost the belt. So, I agree. It should probably wind up being a co-main event just because the rivalry, it really isn't built in with the fan base over the years. But I think for people like who've really been watching and paying attention to their careers, super excited for that rematch. And I just gotta now, like, the more I've been thinking about it, and I'm like, oh, I want that fight now. It's a perfect time.
You know what you put on? You know what you put on the top, Ali, the Chaychek Zhang Li rematch as an event.
Yeah,
there you go.
And those usually lead into a pay per view like the week before too. So who knows?
I have a feeling that isn't the tough finale going to be in an empty arena though, in the empty Apex? Like, I don't want to see Yoan and Weili in an empty arena.
Yeah, that would suck. That would suck. Yeah, you can't have that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Ryoana won't even take that. She says she's only going to fight with fans.
It's going to be in Glendale. We're going back to Glendale.
Oh, sweet, sweet Glendale.
I'm going to hate it.
All right.
By the way, I'm hearing August 21st for the tough finale, although that's not made official. That's just what I'm hearing right now. Jack Hermanson beat Edmund Shahbazyan. I know he's ranked number 7. Is he in a position where fights have to play out before he can match? I think Jack sort of said it himself. Like he said, he was pretty honest with his assessment. He said, the only guy that's, you know, like Jose said, the only guy that's ranked above me that doesn't have anybody is Rob Whitaker. And if he doesn't want to wait for the title shot, sure, I'll fight him. But then he mentioned the other two fights, the Brunson Costa fight, or the Brunson Till fight and the Costa Cannonier fight. He said, I'll take the winner or the loser of either of those two fights. That's fine with me too. So I think he does have to kind of wait and see how things play out. But you also got Rockhold. You got Calvin Gastelum out there. So, I mean, Forget Gastelum.
Yeah.
I got to stop like reading the Twitter on the next one suggestions.
That's like one of the more, that's like his most impressive win, like lately. That was like what, sub-minute heel hook or something like that?
Yep. Yeah.
I like, because he was already matched up with, if Till loses, I wouldn't hate that, because he was already matched up with Till once, right? And then it fell apart, and then Vettori kind of stepped in for Till, and that's how Vettori got into this position. So I wouldn't hate that either.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fun middleweight fights have to happen, but I feel like we've been saying that forever.
It's a fun division. All right, what else?
More importantly,
show some love to Jack Hermanson's hair. I'm telling you, man, I think the UFC, I'm not saying that Jack Hermanson is like, because like Wonder Boy, people, everyone loves Wonder Boy. He's like universally loved by 95% of the people. But I think why people like him so much is he's like such a positive guy. And like parents are just like, if my kids had like a Wonder Boy t-shirt or something, like we'd be like, yeah, I'm down for that. And I feel like Hermanson is like, not quite on the same level, but he's very similar to Wonder Boy. Where like, if you interview Jack Hermanson, the man has a smile on his face the entire time. He's like just the nicest guy to speak with. But then when he gets in that cage and that door locks, you could just see the scowl on his face. Just a different guy. So I even tweeted this out. If my kid came up to me and goes, "Daddy, you know who my favorite fighter is? Jack Hermanson." I'd high five him. That's a great pick, son. That's a great pick.
How old is your son?
8.
I'd be like, why do you know who Jack Hermanson is? You're 8 years
old. This sounds like one of those fake tweets that people write, like, can't believe my five-year-old today said that, man, those UFC fighters should really unionize. I was so proud. Is this what just happened there, Mike?
Dude, it was funny the other day, because like he does guitar lessons and his guitar teacher will like email me the Zoom link on like my old like freelance email account, which is like where my old YouTube page was when I was doing interviews before I signed up with MMA Fighting. So like the other day, I'm just like getting stuff ready for an interview and I hear my kid just go, "Ooh." And I like look over at his computer and he's watching the replay of Jorge Masvidal flying me and Ben Askren. I'm like, what are you watching? Are you kidding me right now? he goes on YouTube and he's like logged onto my account and I probably watched that highlight a million times.
And then tears in his eyes, he shouted at you, "I learned it from you, Dad." It's like the old.
Yeah. Needless that's to an say, old
reference. You know what? A lot of people are not going to get that, but that's a commercial.
Wait,
the anti-tweet commercials back in the day. Okay. I learned it from you.
Okay, enough of these anti-drug commercials. Jackie Manson's hair.
Tremendous.
Hair, the beard. He's part, yeah,
I dug. He's it. Apparently part of the Chase Hooper
he has hair.
Family now.
He has hair.
Is the beard is the beard's new too, right? Was that new? Everything? The whole?
I think so. He's only been pretty clean, like yeah. pretty clean everything. Scruff.
Derek Lewis hates
it. He's now on the Derek Lewis shit list, unfortunately.
I know we kind of talked about this, but you know, I'm seeing comments like this a lot.
Edmund's kind of been exposed. If you can get him out of the first round, he's very beatable.
I don't think it's about the first round. I just think it's more about like he fought a really good grappler who's just a better grappler. Yeah, that's pretty much it. I don't think the rounds have anything.
But think about it. He fought Derek Brunson in a main event. He gets his butt kicked by Derek Brunson, which is, you know, Derek Brunson's an A-level middleweight. So they give him someone maybe like, what, just 5% less better than Derek Brunson? I don't know. Jack Hermanson on his best days is as good as Derek Brunson is. So, like, it's not like they gave him a step back. It was almost, you know, a lateral step, you know? So, he's not been exposed. He's 23. That's what happened. We got reminded of his age, and I think, and that's all.
And Jack Hermanson's very good.
Yeah. And people forgot. Yeah. Y'all must have forgot type of thing for Hermanson.
Yeah. He's just excellent at making adjustments. Yeah. Tremendous at making adjustments.
Trying to see what people are saying in the comments here.
This week on The Pitch, would you like fries with that?
People are what make franchises run. The person who knows the business inside and out. Yep. Not someone who came off Wall Street because their check clears. Franchairs is the first investment marketplace where people can invest in franchises.
So you said $800 billion is what this market is a year. And hundreds of businesses are actually franchised businesses.
Thousands.
Thousands and thousands.
There are more brands franchised than there are stocks on the NASDAQ.
Oh.
You're raising a $4 million price round.
And what are the terms on that?
The $19 million post-money valuation.
And do you not think that the valuation is a little frothy?
This week, things get frothy when Kenny Rose brings a new alternative investment class to retail investors. Go right now and subscribe to The Pitch, wherever you listen to podcasts.
So this has probably been talked about. Where does Cody Garbrandt go from here? I don't think we're going to talk about Cody on to the next one. I just don't see it happening just because it's not a pay-per-view.
Six winners. Okay, fair enough. Yeah, sure. Might not make it.
I think we can answer that question right now.
Sure.
I feel maybe throw him to Marab.
Oh.
Marab's going to fight somebody in the top 10. He's got to.
I know.
Or, you know, something crazy might happen. Like Marab just isn't as good of a striker and he just loses. It's not like we're putting Cody Garbrandt head first into a wood chipper.
Fair.
Like if that's the case, why is Aljamain Sterling the champion? Just give it to Marab.
Yeah. And Marab's not a 2-0 fighter. Like Marab is ready for a sink or swim type of scenario at this point. Like, he's literally fought like the same ranked sort of guys like his last three fights, like 13, 14 range. Let's just throw him in there with somebody. I think that's a good idea. You could do Cody versus Marlon Moraes if you wanted to.
Cody versus Casey Kenny. I think it would be a fun scrap. Both coming off losses. Casey lost to Cruz. Garbrandt beat Cruz. I think that's just a fun fight, three-round fight.
Chuck DLC in the comments was asking, is Dominic Cruz, do you think he's thinking that he can beat Cody in a rematch? Should they try and book that? Do you think Cruz would want to do that? Like, do you think he would want that fight right now? Even though he's coming off a win, do you think he'd want to do that fight now?
That's interesting.
I'd be down for that.
You could.
That's interesting.
But do you think, I think Cruz would want that one back. I don't think Cruz sees that as a matchup that he can't win. No. It's for a moment. I was like, would you want to fight Cody again? Like, yeah. So another five round, like again, a fight night main event. You'd probably be down for that. What do you guys think about flyweight? I mean, now I feel like if he goes down, you cannot give him an immediate title shot. I think that would be absolutely.
You shouldn't give it to him anyway.
I know he shouldn't have gotten one the first time, but I'm saying the fact that it even happened, I was like, I hope they're not thinking that they can do that now because completely out of the question. But if he can comfortably make 125, yeah, maybe that's the move next. You know, the old change of division, rejuvenation.
Yeah, and he ain't going to get an easy test on there either. I mean, no. Just look at what are you going to – I mean, just look at what's there. Like, you get the rematching Brandon Moreno and Figgy. You got Askar Askarov that's, like, right there waiting for a title shot of his own. I think he missed weight in his last fight, so that might hinder him. So maybe you could do Garbrandt versus Askarov. That ain't no cup of tea at all.
If Cody can make it to flyweight healthy and – By the looks of tonight, I mean, I know Font's just a skinnier person, so the body frames are all different. But like, Cody looks like a small bantamweight all of a sudden. You know, I don't know. Maybe when you're losing, you just seem smaller. I don't know if it's just a psychological thing, but he kind of looked like a small bantamweight. So if he can make flyweight successfully, yeah, Askarov is a great fight. Actually, I was thinking Cody versus I forgot his name, but the gentleman that beat Manel Cape.
Pantoja.
Oh, Pantoja's an awesome fight too. Oh, is that fight?
He's fighting Brandon Royval. Yeah.
No, the guy that lost to Manel Cape just recently.
Nicolau?
Nicolau, yeah. I mean, I'm just saying.
Why not, like, give him Tim Elliott? Let's just throw him in there with Tim Elliott.
Yeah, if Tim wins his next fight.
I'm saying Nicolau is coming off a Cape win, you know.
That's a fun fight.
Yeah.
Tim Elliott's a madman.
I mean, either way. But basically, I think this question really is Cody Dunn has a elite bantamweight? I don't think he is. I think he just lost to a better guy tonight.
I don't know. I mean, I would as a top five bantamweight, no. As an elite, like, fight for the belt in the next 2 years kind of bantamweight, no.
It just feels like literally anyone in the top five at bantamweight could just beat all the others at any given point. Like, I don't think there's one bantamweight that's like, that is the best bantamweight on planet Earth in the UFC. It's so competitive.
I agree.
Because if Font and Garbrandt ran it back 10 times, and you want to argue that Garbrandt wins three or four of them, I'm like, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Font beats Cody 10 times in a row. Like, Sanhagen's obviously terrifying. Dillashaw's not even, like, if you look at the rankings, Dillashaw's not even there because he's coming off his suspension. So, like, everyone drops down one once he gets slotted back in at number one.
Sweet. Yeah, I mean, bantamweight just rules. It just rules. So good. Bantamweight in the world might even be in the top 15 yet. That's what's so crazy about bantamweight.
I think Cody is done as a contender, as a top five guy. I think, especially again, as with all the names you said, they're like coming up hot from like outside the top 10. I think the division change might be the way to go if he can do it.
Yeah, if he can do it. Yeah.
How old is he right now? Is he even 30
this,
yet?
This is what I'm talking about too. Yeah,
20, he's only 29, I think.
29. So like he, yeah. And like, okay, this is important too. I mean, if his body can hold up and his chin seems to still be there, that's why I haven't given up at Cody at bantamweight yet. As far as obviously he went five rounds with Rob Font. Rob Font is without a doubt, in the UFC at least, top three bantamweights, top four bantamweights. Just because you lose to Rob Font doesn't mean Cody's done. And at his age, I just hope his chin stays there. Hope his body can because he's been doing some wars. Hope his body can handle all this. But I just don't want to see big weight cuts.
Look at Cody trains with Team Alpha Male, who has not had the best track record as of late, correct? Like, they haven't been blowing people out of the water. His best performance ever, his head coach was Justin Buchholz. He hasn't had Justin since then, and look what's happened. And then he trains with Mark Henry, and like, Marlon Moraes left Mark Henry because he felt like he needed to get better training with ATT. Like, Frankie Edgar's obviously born and bred Mark Henry. He's never going to leave. It's not like Mark Henry's team, like Jim, is like destroying people either. So like, maybe it's just a change of scenery too. Maybe he just needs like different training partners, different approach to the, like, to his fights. I have no idea, but I still want to see him 135, and I still want to see him fight Aldo. I still want to see him rematch Cruz. And eventually I want to see him fight Sugar Sean, because those guys have hate each other anyway.
Yeah. That, you know what? That's if O'Malley beats Lewis Smolka, that might be the fight to make. You do O'Malley versus Garbrandt.
I forgot
that's
about
exactly
that.
The fight to make.
Do it.
There you go. There's your answer.
See, that's why we pay Jose the big bucks. That's why we do it. I got this.
Yeah. Like, what if TJ loses? badly to Sanhagen. And all of a sudden, Garbrandt's like, I'm 0-2 against you on drugs. I want a third fight with you clean. Like, I'm not going to say no to that either because those are just fun fights. Well, do I favor Cody? No. But I think those are still fun fights to make.
We got to see how TJ looks, too. We have no idea.
Exactly. Yeah. 100%. TJ might look completely, might look, I'm not saying these individuals are. I'm not saying these individuals were, you know, on anything, but like we just had this conversation with like after USADA joins, like how many fighters just look different, just fell off the map. So I have no idea if that's going to happen with TJ, but yeah, he might still be the best bantamweight in the world.
All right.
Will the UFC keep Dumont at 45? Will she move back to bantamweight?
She already said she's
35 if she can do it. Yeah, she's got to. She
said
she has to. She has to.
I would say this is that's like a weird move, except for the fact that she told it was on MMAfight.com. She told Gui this week, she's like, I don't want to fight Amanda Nunez right now. I know everyone's saying like if she stays at 145, oh, she gets the Amanda Nunez fight, like either right away, probably whenever Amanda's, you know, decides to fight at 145 again. But she doesn't want it. She's actually very pragmatic. She's like, I saw what happened to Felicia Spencer when she fought Amanda and she wasn't ready, and I don't want that to be me. So if anyone's wondering, yeah, why she's trying to take the longer road. She's doing that on purpose. She wants seasoning. She wants to fight, I guess, at a weight where she feels she'll be more competitive, even though the end goal will still be Amanda. But she'll also get, again, she'll get to fight more. There just aren't people on the 145-pound roster. She wants to fight. And again, now if it's not Amanda at 145, it's like Danielle Wolfe or who else? Who she replaced? Who am I forgetting? At one,
it was Wolf. Was
no, she replaced Danielle Wolf? Yeah.
No. Is there anyone else at 145?
Farah Zayern.
Yes.
You can do the Sean O'Shaughnessy and just make names up.
Leah had some injuries. I think she's trying to come back right now. So I mean,
And I think she would come back at 135 though. I don't even think she would come back as a 145er.
I don't know if Leah can get to 135.
You don't think so? I didn't think she was that big. I didn't think she was that big.
Yeah, she's a big 45er, very muscular.
So there you go. But she hasn't fought since 2018. So like we said, we don't know when she's coming back. So I don't even know if that's an option. So yeah, she just wants to go to 135 because that's where the fights are. So I can't blame her. I hope she can make it. It sucks that she hasn't been able to hit it yet. But
it looks like she missed weight. She missed twice. Didn't she miss weight? Yeah, twice.
139.5 and then 139.5, but that fight was canceled. She only fought once, and both times. But both times she tried to weigh in 3.5 pounds over, so not even close.
But she's in Vegas now with John Wood and those guys at Syndicate. So she's right near the PI. So if she wants to make the move to 35. The folks at the PI will help her. Just take some time and get your body right and come up with a plan and don't rush into the next fight. Just focus on starting a healthy cut to 135.
Juliana Pena also is also standing in the way right now. There's no guarantee Amanda Nunes wins that fight either.
Yeah.
Jose, I'm sorry. Casey, do you see Tristan Gordet's question?
No, I don't.
Okay. It's on YouTube about Felder.
Oh, hold on. That's the next question. Jeez, I figured maybe we might wrap up with that.
Is it a question or what?
He's trying to make him fight. Make him fight. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Just two retirements from two UFC fighters this week. We can just talk about that.
I'll tell you what. There's hats off to the UFC production squad for these two videos tonight. I thought the Joe Ban video was tremendous. I thought the Felder one was really good. I didn't see the Felder retirement coming. I'm not like incredibly surprised that it's coming, that it happened and that we heard it, but I was surprised we heard it on this broadcast for sure. But good on him. Tremendous career, just a fun fighter. The guy exceeded expectations. I think he would even admit that. I think he got up to like number five or number six at 155 in the UFC, which is like pretty unbelievable considering.
Dude has a win over the champ. Like. He's the last person to beat Charles Oliveira.
Beat him on the ground. Beat him on the ground.
Yeah, it's happened a few times with Charles. Yeah, well. But yeah, it's still impressive.
The dude's just such a gamer. Fought Mike Perry up a weight class on like 2 days' notice. Fought Rafael Dos Anjos.
Yeah, like except he no-showed the preview show in Denver. I'll never forgive him.
Oh, the grudge. Dang.
When it was me, Casey, and Esther were at Denver, and for the we were at the official weigh-ins, and I went up to Phil. I was like, "You want to do the preview show with?" Because like, this is my first time on the road with Casey and Esther.
I remember that now. Yeah,
and I was like, "You want to do it?" And he was like, "Yeah, sure, man. Like, just let me know when it's over." And then it wrapped, and he just disappeared. And then the next thing I know, he's hitting pads in the other room,
right
like,
next to us.
There. And it's like, and I look in, he looks at me, goes, "Oh yeah, man, I'm already in workout gear now." I'm just like, "All right, have fun." And that's why if you go back and watch that, like Esther was like a very last minute fill in because they were like every fighter that was around disappeared because like then we thought like, oh, well, could we get Tisha Torres to do it because Raquel Pennington is fighting? But Raquel was like really struggling. Yeah. Like, wait. So you're like, yeah, she has her hands full right now. There was just no one else around. So I was like, Paul Felder, I shake my fist at you. But awesome career. And I hope you enjoy it.
But happy trails nonetheless.
good luck on your
I spent a lot of time. I spent a lot of time around Paul on Fight Island because we were like, stuck in a hotel. So like him and like Michael Chiesa would just like hang out with the media a bunch. So he's and we just talked a lot about fighting, but a lot about like, you know, like the Philadelphia Eagles and like actual like non-MMA sports. He's interesting cat, man, and I hope if anyone runs into him, they get a fun conversation with him because he's well spoken on TV and off screen.
So I met Paul Felder before he was in the UFC when he came down to Cowboys Ranch as a training partner. I was actually at Cowboys BMF Ranch doing a video on Cowboy, and then Felder was just there as a training partner, and he asked me to. He's like, "Can you shoot some of my training, some pad work and stuff, and just so I can have it." I was like, "Yeah, whatever." You know, so I sent him footage and stuff. And like, I remember the guy. I was like, "Ooh, this guy is mean on the pads." I had no idea if he was a good fighter or not, but I remember him.
Oh,
like,
man.
And the whole when Cowboy, and then like maybe a couple months later, the UFC signed him on a short notice fight through Cowboy's recommendation. And,
yep.
And the rest is history.
Decapitated Danny Castillo. Do you remember he fought James Vick in the co-main event of the Phoenix card that you were at, Casey, and his. Whoever was holding mitts for him, I don't know his name. He had like those hammer mitts, you know, the ones that were like,
It
looks like a hammer. And he was doing this. And I just remember, I'm like, I have never seen anyone hit those kind of pads before. And it just looked so fun. But I just, every time he punched it, I wanted it to make a squeaky noise whole time. So it looked awesome. It was, that was a good open workout. He was a fighter that put on awesome open workouts. Like he took it seriously.
He did. When I was in Abu Dhabi for the open workout in Abu Dhabi, afterward he was just like, "Oh my god, that was exhausting." Like that, because he's one of those guys. Once he feels the crowd around him, I mean, he becomes like, you know, the Irish dragon. You know, like he's not Paul Felder. You can tell he's the guy that enjoys being in the spotlight. You know, he was a theater actor before, so that's just who he is. He likes it. He embraces it, and. Great career. Get out while you can. Go out and a win. Go out where you still got your good looks. Go out where you still have a really good job with the UFC. So, smart man.
I also think, was it the first Barboza fight in Chicago, he talked to the UFC into letting him do an open workout. Like, he wasn't on the docket. And he's like, "No, I'm going to do that." And he just like, and they were like, "Oh, yeah, I'm not going to tell you no." Okay. Like Sean O'Malley did the same thing. I'm like, I wish more fighters would do this. Like Sean O'Malley just showed up and he's like, "I'm working out." And the UFC PR was like, "Okay, have fun." Like it was cool. I wish more people did that.
Dude, remember he showed up in his, Sean O'Malley in his weed robe?
Yeah. Well, he was going to do, because I talked to UFC security.
They wouldn't let him,
He was going to do it on, have you been to a fight in the MGM, Mike? Like
no, work on I've never MGM been to Vegas. I've never been to Vegas ever.
Wow.
That's another story to talk. Yeah. Like, wow.
So in the MGM, they do the open workouts on like the floor, like outside the casino, but it's like people are like walking around and there's a balcony that comes in from like, because you know, in Vegas has a bunch of overwalks and there's a balcony that literally overlooks it. So if you're a fan, I would honestly rather watch the open workout from the balcony rather than like being crammed up and close. But Sean O'Malley showed up and he was going to do an open workout on the balcony. And the UFC security was like, "Sean, you can't just start hitting mitts in the middle of a casino. Like, just come down and do it with down here." Like, all right. So
didn't Destro get a great shot at Didn't Esther get a great shot of him up there?
Looking like a drug lord looking down at
him. Oh, absolutely. Not looking like a UFC fighter at all. Like looking like some shady Las Vegas weirdo.
Gray facial hair. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, for anyone, that picture I think has circulated around a lot. So anyone who's seen that picture, that's Esther Lynn special.
There it is.
Yeah, that's the one. People have seen this picture. And again, if you would think it was like an actor like in rehab or something. No. You know what I mean? He doesn't look like a fighter. That's something else.
He just got that face tattoo that week too.
Because
we were chatting
Esther Lynn classic.
Yeah, before media day, we were chatting about tattoos, and he's like, "I'm like, what's the most recent one?" He goes, "I got this one about 10 hours ago." And I was like, "Why are you? Don't get tattoos during fight week."
Or do.
I mean, you won, but you also broke your leg.
So I guess that was a 10-8 for the Felder retirement. We didn't talk about the Joban retirement at all. I'll just say, you know, he also had a pretty good career. I think it was derailed a lot by injuries.
Yeah.
I think there's at least two pretty long stretches of at least either 18 months to like 2 years where Joban didn't get a fight. And he made his debut in the UFC. He was already like 32, 33,
I think. Started late. He made his debut against Seth Brzezinski in UFC Bangor. Because Seth Brzezinski, Ryan Bader in Bangor, Maine, Ryan Bader headlines that against OSP. And I was there to do like behind the scenes work with Bader. Cause this is when I was working for Arizona Sports. So like my dad's from Maine. So my dad went to go see family and I went to the fight. So I was doing a bunch of behind the scenes stuff with Bader, and Seth Brzezinski was obviously training at Power MMA too. So it was like those two. So I was doing a lot of like fight week blogs and videos and stuff. And Seth Brzezinski was so confident against this newcomer, Alan Joban. And I think they won fight of the night, if I remember correctly, but it was a first round stop. It was a 4 minute fight. And I still think that won fight of the night. That's how wild that fight was. But yeah, I'd never forgot Alan Joban after that, because I thought Seth was going to win for sure because of how confident he was. And Alan Joban proved him wrong.
Yeah.
My Alan Joban memory is like, when I go to this restaurant called Tender Greens near here, there's the Equinox right next to it. And outside Equinox was a giant poster of Alan Joban.
Probably, yeah.
I was like,
in all his glory.
I was like, yeah, all glistening. He was glory.
A modeling poster,
not a model.
He's in like Dior and like Ralph Lauren stuff with Versace. Like the Hadid sisters. Versace the Hadid sisters, who are more famous than any UFC fighter not named Conor McGregor. Alan Joban has numerous opportunities outside of getting punched in the face, and he has a beautiful family, so all power to him for getting paid and not taking brain damage. He's doing just fine.
two good retirements.
He just looks in the mirror and goes, I'm beautiful.
Anytime he's down, I'm Alan.
He definitely beat Dwight Grant.
Oh, that was a close. I remember that.
Oh, dude, yeah, that was. Might be able to talk about that. I think I've talked about that fight before. I remember because I was a big Bilal Muhammad believer when he was on the regional scene and in Titan FC, interviewed him a bunch. So when he finally got the call of the UFC on short notice to fight Alan Joban, I was like, oh man, this fight is going to be phenomenal. And not a lot of people knew who Bilal was at the time. And I was like, I'm telling you right now, this fight is going to be outrageous. And it was. Those two guys got after it and beat the brakes off each other. It was such a good fight.
I think the issue with Alan Joban is, and he's a fantastic fighter, but like a lot of people, they just remember his losses because for a while he was just losing either controversially or just violently. Like, remember that snap takedown that Gunnar Nelson got on him in London? He hurt him, and Alan was like out on his feet, and then Gunnar Nelson grabbed his neck, and then just Tony Ferguson snapped him down and then choked him out. And then he got smashed by Nico Price in the next fight in Mexico City. But then he also got head kicked by Albert Tumanov, if I remember correctly. So he was getting violently finished or pulling off dominant decision or KO win. So, but you can never say he was in a boring fight. That much.
But you can never say he's not a beautiful man. You can never say that.
He's a beautiful man. He's a beautiful man, and he's in fantastic fights all of the time. Except for that Dwight Grant fight, I don't think that was that good, but I still think he won.
He beat Mike Perry, right? He was one of the first guys to beat Mike
Perry. Yeah. Yep. He's one of the first guys to beat Mike Perry. And I remember the UFC was doing a lot more behind the scenes stuff, before the walkouts. and whoever ran UFC social was standing with Alan Joban behind the scenes, and they were playing the Mike Perry, like you know when they show the guys talking about their opponents before the main card, and like I think they were opening the main card or something, and Alan Joban is literally pacing and huffing, like he's literally like like just breathing really heavy, just looking at Mike Perry like, I'm gonna fuck this dude up, and then he did. It was, I still remember that clip. 10 out of 10 social media work, UFC employee.
Tremendous. Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the Tristan Gordeck question. Casey just asking, is Felder going to be a Hall of Famer? Yeah, but he will, because Dana White likes him. So they'll find some way to get him in there. It'll be as thankful for both his 9-6 UFC career and his broadcasting work and his work as an analyst. And again, this will be down the road somewhere. You know, again, the UFC will find all kinds of ways to put guys into their Hall of Fame, just to, you know, just to bulk it up and to be people they like, give them a little hat tip.
In 4 or 5 years, when the UFC holds their next event in Philadelphia, they'll announce it there.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Depends what city they're going to. There's all kinds of reasons to put guys in the Hall of Fame. And Felder's, you know, sorry, again, you can certainly do a lot worse than Paul Felder, given his accomplishments and, again, his good relationship with the UFC. He's a company man, and it's worked out very well for him and for them.
Yes, and if you want to like sort of pay tribute to Paul Felder, go back and watch the super underappreciated fight with Dan Hooker from last year, because there are so many like ridiculous fights that happened like a month or two and like further on. Cause like Zhang Weili and Joanna was like 2 months later or like a month later. And then Poirier Hooker happened Felder. Like yeah, 5 months Hooker. Later.
You yeah, know what the problem Felder with that Hooker's fight was?
Crazy fight.
With the problem with Felder Hooker is like 30 minutes later, Tyson Fury knocked out Deontay Wilder. That is, and that's all anyone talks right. about. That's right, just right. unfortunate. Timing is everything.
I watched that.
That was the same card? That was the same night?
Oh, you're that was the same was, night because we it was like, it was. I think even Bellator had a fight on Friday or something like that. And like, this is before Savas had joined. I think this is before you joined, Mike. Oh, so yeah. Me, Casey, and Esther did a post show. And we were like, Jose, when did you start working? I was like, and it was Sunday morning at this point because of the boxing ended on Vegas time. And we're like, Jose, when did you start working? I was like, Wednesday. And I haven't stopped. That was one of the longest weeks of my life because we still hadn't filled all the gaps on the social video team. So it was literally the three of us just be like, fights.
Fights.
Yeah, I think that fight happened like a month before I started.
Yep.
One more question, Mr. Heck?
All right, we'll do one more.
One more.
Favorite moment of the weekend?
Oh,
it's a good question.
Oh, that's easy for me. The Hannah. I don't want to harp on it. The Hannah guy celebration wiggle. That was hilarious. That was great. That was great. And I don't want people to hate. Listen, the other thing is, I don't want people to hate on Valerie Lareda too much.
No hate on her. No.
Look, what I hate is people going like, oh, why was she ranked so high and why was she like pushed so much? And I'm like, she doesn't control that. I mean, yeah. she's not fighting it, certainly. And she certainly does everything she can to promote herself. And that's great. I encourage that. If you don't like her because you don't think she's a good fighter, I mean, that's fine. That's whatever. But to go beyond that and like harp on like, oh, she just tries too hard or being pushed. I'm like, no, we want that in fighters. We want fighters to promote themselves as long as they're doing it in a way that's not like hurting or offending anyone. Like, I don't understand why with the haters that. But anyway, but no, favorite moment. Yeah, Hannah Guy, again, whatever. So it wasn't a super elite fight, but she won. She won on the Bellator main card. She won against, again, someone Bellator has been pushing very hard, and good for her. And like we said, she seemed to have a lot of fun with the post-fight interview as well. So it's always nice. You have those nice little moments. Who knows? Maybe we never hear anything big from Hannah Guy again. But on this given night, you know, she got to be a star. That's always really fun.
Well said.
I think my favorite moment is actually just watching Cyborg get the fight. I think she's in the, I don't want to say twilight of her career, but no, she's been doing this for a long time. And anytime you get to watch Cyborg fight and a great fight and get to watch her evolve as a fighter, and you get to see her compete against a super tough fighter in Leslie Smith, and you get to see the best Leslie Smith, and they fought a great 24 minutes and 51 seconds or something like that. And so just seeing Cyborg fight is a great honor. I love watching her fight.
I hate watching Chris Cyborg fight for the same reason I hate watching Amanda Nunes fight, is the fact that we're never going to get the rematch. And that infuriates me.
Yeah,
I know. Like, that's literally all I can think about. Like I agree with Casey. Like, anytime Cyborg fights, that's must-watch television for me, even if I'm not watching it. But I'm just so annoyed the entire time. Like, the same as Amanda. Like, when Amanda Nunes fought Felice Spencer, I was like, Felice Spencer, I like you as a person a lot, but why can we not see Chris Cyborg and Amanda Nunes too?
I'll go a little bit of a deeper cut. I'll go Syed Awad's knockout win against Nate Andrews.
Underrated.
Because that was a good scrap.
Walk off.
Yep.
He committed to the walk off. He wanted that walk off so bad. He tried to call it like multiple times, and then finally Dan Bergliotta was like, no, he's still you can have this one. But yeah. Good on him, man. I mean, just one of the good guys in the sport, one of the exciting guys in the sport. That was a cool moment to see him sort of bounce back and get that kind of finish. And Nate Andrews is a really tough out. He's a guy that, I don't know, 3 years ago, when he was fighting in the New England regional scene before he signed with the PFL, like, everyone thought the UFC was going to pick him up because he was just rifling through everybody on the regional scene, especially in CES. He was headlining all the CES cards on Fight Pass and just destroying everybody he fought. And everyone thought the UFC was going to give him a shot, and they never did. And it's just one of those kind of questions, like, what if? Like, what if he had got that shot? Like, did Nate Andrews not getting to the UFC, like, just really hamper him because he thought he deserved it and was really let down by the whole situation? And then he had a little bit of a tough road in PFL, but good Syed Awad, man. Good stuff. That might have been my favorite moment of the weekend.
And I know we tried to post the video, but we had some audio issues. But if you get a chance, watch Syed Awad's post fight scrum he does backstage on maybe on Bellator's media channel. But very emotional. You know, he's being of Palestinian background. So yeah, thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. I forgot about that fight, Mike. That was great.
There we go.
Oh, cool.
All right, I think we're done. I think we have milked this card for all that it's worth. But that is not true, because we're going to talk more about it tomorrow. AK and I, on to the next one, returns, as we discuss matchmaking possibilities for the winners, a wild card, and we go to the peeps, possibly a mic check, and maybe some check the tapes. I don't know. All that and more coming up on your podcast feeds sometime tomorrow.
Quick interruption. We got a message from BTL contestant Matthew Wells.
Thanks, Matthew.
AK, enjoy the rest of your 487th birthday. With that being said, we're out of here. For AK, for Casey, for Jose, I am Mike Heck. Good night, everybody.
Everyone go to comicbooksforkids.org and donate. Thank you.
All your money.
You're welcome. All of it.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.